Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
For someone. A woman.
Name?
Vanna.
First name or last?
I don't know.
A species?
I don't know. Humanoid.
What ship did she arrive on?
I don't know.
Well, what can you tell me about her?
Let's see. I'd say she's about 1.6 meters tall. Brown skin. Dark hair. And the last time I saw her, she was wearing a... She was wearing red.
Well, that's something anyway.
Do you think you can help me?
I don't know.
I need to find her, Constable. I think she may be in some kind of trouble.
What kind of trouble? Let me guess. You don't know.
Hello, and welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Wait, you didn't start the thing yet.
Oh, I'll start the timer.
Oh, shit.
Shit, man. You fucking shit up.
All right, see, the timer
fucking
started.
Fucking shit up for me?
No. I just, you know, started, and we were quiet for a while, and so I thought, let's do it. Let's get started. Hello, welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Good morning, Chief.
Good morning, Major.
Morning, Commander.
There we go. See, we just got right into it.
Yep.
None of this dilly-dally.
None of this poopy-doopy-dee.
No, nobody likes the dilly-dally.
It seemed like there was a fair amount of dilly-dally.
Yeah. This is poopy-doopy.
Just not on tape, I guess.
Well, just that's fair.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of a wreck today. I was like,
a wreck or erect?
What?
I'm sorry, I should not have laughed at that. Dan's a little out of sorts. Dan took one of those unscheduled naps.
Yeah, I did.
You hear about this on the television. From time to time, these unscheduled naps.
Oh, yeah.
That on the one hand, you wake up, you're like, wow, I am rested. And you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Why do I feel so rested?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
It's because I took one of those unscheduled sleep through the alarms.
Yeah.
Well, I turned on the alarm and I was like, okay, I'm going to get up in a minute and then right back out.
Yeah.
That's a rookie mistake that I've been making throughout my whole life is the whole like, okay, I'm going to get up. I'm just going to lay here for another minute.
And note, we're talking about like a late afternoon, early evening nap.
Yeah, I was tired, man.
Not one of these wake-em-ups in the morning.
Yeah,
morning type business.
I know how to nap. If it's careful, I have a hard time napping. They tend to turn into sleeps. So,
well, you know, what are you going to do?
So, like, I was late, and I'm, like, running around, and I'm, like, pushing everything together.
I think it's okay.
And I'm,
I don't think it should be that much
going
pressure.
Going in and out, and in and out, and in and out.
That's a weird thing to say, but I don't think there should be that much pressure.
No.
I think you should take it easy.
So I'm a little harried.
Harried?
You are harried. I'm a little bit harried.
Self-harried, though, I'd say.
These guys are just as bubbly as ever, which anyone's ever out there ever been harried before, the worst thing when you're harried is everyone around you is up and bubbly.
Bubbling.
I don't know if that always is true. I don't know if that's like
effervescent.
An axiom, per se. It is true tonight, though, and I think generally true with Jesse and I, because if you leave Jesse and I unmonitored for too long.
Yeah.
Right? So Jesse came about an hour before you came, since you were a little bit delayed.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just, I think we're troublemakers. We
troublemakers.
Trouble starts to bubble.
Trouble
bubbles up.
Well,
you guys better not make so much trouble.
I haven't, like, in grade school, didn't you ever wake up early and you're like, I'm so tired, and then your dad's all like, hey, son, blah, and you're just like, oh, God, stop, and he's like, what are you so grumpy for, blah, yeah. And he's like, oh, geez, man, can you just give me a chance to wake up? You're such a grump in the morning, blah, and it just makes it worse, and you're even more pissed off. I don't know if that's just happened to me. I feel like that's happened at least somebody else in the world.
I think that happens to everybody.
Yeah. I think it's a relatable story that you conveyed there, Dan.
Yeah, well, I was saying it in response to saying, like, it's similar to sometimes when you're harried and everyone around you is bubbly, depending on the situation. And to no fault of the people, the bubbly people, the harried person has a hard time acclimating to this sort of the delta in, you know, enthusiasm.
It was good that you have this very public forum to sort of work out the therapy.
Yes.
Good, good. Good. Good.
Is this a new section you have in your sound clip library? The good. I mean, you already have. You do that anyway, right?
That's good.
You collect.
Good.
You collect like the same word.
Good.
Like you'll group together if you get enough of them.
Good.
Good. Good.
Good. Good.
Good.
Good. Good.
Good. Good.
Good.
That's when Spock last week in Arena, great. Spock is all like he noodled it out, or he's figured it out. He's reasoned it out. That's what he said.
Yeah, he's reasoned it out.
Reasoned it out.
I have that somewhere in here if we want to vamp for a little bit.
I bet you do. No, you can do whatever you want.
Vamp-a-rama.
He has reasoned it out. The reason is crystal clear.
There has to be a reason. There has to be a reason.
It has to be reasonable.
He has reasoned it out.
Yeah, that's the reason section.
Yeah.
Many reasons.
That's the reason.
That's a good one.
Good.
Good. Good.
Good.
Since we happen to be talking about the old Arena that we discussed last week, we do have an email.
We haven't even announced. We haven't done the whole opening yet.
Oh, you're right. Okay. All right.
Now's the part of the podcast where we talk about how we have to do the opening right.
And then now's the part where normally you would say is like, not this bit again. We're not doing this bit. And then I would say, it's not a bit. We're just legitimately incompetent at this shit.
Not so good at it.
This is okay.
And it comes out all funny.
Is this? I think this is episode 310. Is this 310?
I thought last week was 310.
No.
Last week was 39.
I think last week was 39.
I don't know.
I thought last week was 310.
No, last week was number 309, Arena.
Seems that way.
Indeed, it was. I've in fact double-checked it. I've loaded up our own website.
Five will get you 10.
According to our website, last week was 309. So this means this week is episode 310.
Do you guys know what this means?
Five will get you 10.
It's a saying,
it's
I guess.
It's like an old sort of aphorism. Old-fashioned kind of.
Well, the question is do you know what this means?
It's the odds. The odds are five will get you 10.
Is it like Bob's your uncle or something?
No, I don't think it's Cockney slang. Well, I think it's just odds slang.
But I mean, it probably means...
Cockney rhyming slang is its own thing.
Oh, is that a rhyme?
Okay, what it means is you're confident that it's true.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
It basically, it's like, put down five, you'll get 10 for that one,
okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like it's worth betting on.
Yeah.
Of course. That might turn out to be a useful one. Mm-hmm. Or it might, as Jesse from the Open Pike Night podcast has pointed out, it might fall under that category of things we say are great, a sound clip we're going to keep using in the future and is never heard from again.
Maybe I can use AI to make a new soundboard that will like make it easier for me to access best of files, like give it its own like quick link page so I can have the best of in a quick link section so I can quickly jump over there instead of having to manually assign it to each week's soundboard.
Will you curate the best of the best, or would you create a yet another AI agent to make that determination for
us? Well, I do collect the best of the sound files. It's its own soundboard is best of. But the problem is that each week I make a new soundboard, and with this particular software,
you
it's not
manually transfer.
It's not. It takes a minute to switch between soundboards, so it's quickest if I manually add them to it. But if I had a soundboard app where it had its own button that had like loadouts, you know, sound quick
loadouts.
quick access like soundboards, I could just quickly jump between back and forth between.
Damn,
and I could just
dude,
have the
serious?
Whole best of at my disposal to play anything I wanted, whatever.
Honestly, at this stage, it's sounding like we might be should just get you a cart machine and a rack full of, a rack full of 8-track carts to record these things.
8-track carts. Boy, we'd have so many carts.
You could be called Danny Carts.
We Danny need to Long definitely carts. Hire an intern then. Yeah. Who wants to be an intern?
All right. Oh, well, actually, that, so, okay. We're mixing up all the,
we haven't even done it more. I think that was my fault this time.
Yes.
Okay.
Glad you owned up to that. All right. So it's episode 310. It's the Iscot Star Trek podcast. We've welcomed you to that podcast.
Welcome.
It's not a bit. We're incompetent. That's why it's taking us so long to get through all this stuff. The episode we're discussing this week is called, it's from Deep Space Nine. It's from the second season of Deep Space Nine. And it is called...
Oh man.
Second Sight.
Yeah, thank you, Jesse. It's called what? Second Sight. I didn't forget, but for some reason I was having trouble saying it because I kept wanting to say Arena.
He had to get his silly set.
Well, because we did Arena last
week. So wait, is it Arena or what?
No, you know it's not Arena, it's Second Sight.
Would you like to talk about this?
Oh, what a good dad he is. So yes, we're discussing Second Sight, but
now we have something to talk about.
But before that, since we've mentioned last week's episode, Arena, which, by the way, we were joined by a very special guest, Rob, Dan's brother.
Yes.
Which was an awesome time. We had so much fun having Rob join us.
I can see we're going to get along famously.
But we discussed Arena, and we do have one email from Steve. And Steve says, gentlemen, loved your discussion of Arena.
Hi.
And just thought I would add something about the director, Joseph Pevney. You may well have discussed him regarding other episodes.
Disgusting?
No, discussed him.
Disgusting? No. Why is he talking about the director being disgusting?
No, he said you may have discussed him.
Sorry about
or
that.
You may maybe you disgust him, but the way it's spelled is disgust as in talked about.
Evidence!
You may well have discussed him regarding other episodes, but he apparently was noted as an efficient, reliable, cost-effective, etc., director of TV programs.
No shit.
George, I'm not joking, Lee.
George Takei is quoted in the LA Times as calling him authoritarian. And in a strike for nominative determinism, in Czech, the word Pevný means firm, reliable, stalwart, etc. A quick internet search identifies him as being born in New York into a Jewish vaudeville family, but I did not find more genealogical information. Of course, Czech and Jewish are not mutually exclusive categories. No. Makes you wonder if somebody who does not know what their name means could still be influenced by it. Just a curious detail. All the best, Steve.
Thanks, Agamus.
Hey, Steve.
Well, wait. He said George Takei described him as authoritarian. That's not usually a positive thing to say about
I don't
someone.
Think George Takei meant it as authoritarian. Okay. But Steve was making the note. He was
You don't think George Takei meant it as authoritarian?
I mean, sorry.
As positive.
Yes, as positive.
Because the rest of
he
it
definitely
made it,
meant, if he says authoritarian, yeah, he well, meant it as authoritarian.
But the rest of it made it sound like he was like a put together kind of
I could see that somebody who the studio views as efficient, reliable, cost-effective could be by the talent be seen as authoritarian.
True.
Because they're like, we're going to get this done. We're going to get this shot done. Do it right.
Yeah.
And Steve brought up the concept of nominative determinism, which is the suggestion that someone's name can influence their behaviors. So, for example, if somebody is named Super A Number One, like maybe they get good grades.
Right. Let's hope it works. Right now, it's a promising theory.
Or if somebody is named like Tommy Foreman, he'll become like a foreman at a factory.
Or he'll worship his foreskin.
I don't get the connection.
Not there. Tommy Foreskin.
Yeah, not Tommy Foreskin.
Foreman.
But whenever someone says foreman, that's kind of like saying foreskin.
Is it really?
It's like it's similar.
Do you have evidence for this assertion?
Evidence.
There we go. Thank you.
I don't know.
Interesting idea.
I don't know.
Interesting idea, Stephen. Thanks for that tip. I'm always fascinated by meanings of names and components of names and all that and how that can
That's nice, Jake.
Go together. Yeah, it's cool. It's good stuff. Dan's being slightly dismissive of my interest in this topic.
That's something, anyway.
All right. So,
Do you believe in
nominative in determinism?
Normative diaphragmism.
Nominative determinism, I think,
is
an interesting concept because it can be one of those self-fulfilling prophecies. That's why I would suggest that Steve's suggestion that if somebody did not know the meaning of their name, I think is unlikely to influence them. However, somebody who grew up knowing that their name means like king or something like that, maybe it makes them think that they can be in charge.
Oh, speaking of kings, what did the woman say when she gave birth to a king?
What did the woman say, Dan, when she gave birth to a king?
Or wait. What did the woman say as she was giving birth to a king?
All right. So it's very, very important.
Yeah.
When telling a joke.
To do it right the first time?
Specifically the syntax.
Yeah.
The delivery is good. Seems like the syntax had to be corrected. Now, just to remind our audience.
What's he talking about?
Exactly. Let's hear it again. Proper syntax, proper delivery. And then
sounded like one to me.
We're gonna get this excellent punchline that's gonna make all of this bullshit worth it.
Speaking of what Patrick just said, what did the woman say as she was about to give birth? Oh, I shouldn't stumble over my words. What did the woman say as she was giving birth? What did the mother say?
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. What did the mother say?
The question is, at what point can the term mother be applied? I'm not going to offer any suggestions.
Okay, what did the potential? Well, she might already have a kid.
True. Fair point.
What did the mother to be say as she was having her? What did the mother to be say as she was giving birth to a king?
See, Jesse, what's great is this punchline is going to be so fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I'm not guessing.
I can't wait.
Stupid.
I have no doubt that in retrospect, it's going to be one of those obvious punchlines. But right now, at this moment of time,
what did the
I'm not getting. I can't predict what the punchline is.
What did the mother to be say? What did the mother to be say when she was giving birth to a king? You give up?
We give up, Dan.
Jesse?
Yeah, I'm completely defeated.
This will be my crowning achievement.
No.
See, I told you it was stupid.
Yeah.
This will be my crowning achievement.
Crowning? Because crowning has a few meanings in terms of birth.
I will admit that when I was watching the episode.
Don't remind me.
And when Richard Kiley said crowning, I did laugh.
It was pretty disgusting.
It is pretty yucky. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway,
no, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's a beautiful act that happens.
Anyway,
we're all adults here. Yucky.
These sounds are getting me excited. These sounds are getting me excited to talk about Second Sight. But a couple other things to mention just ahead of time.
Okay. Sorry.
I did want to take a moment to mention that our old pal Grayson has just launched his new podcast called The Prime Detective.
Oh.
It's awesome. It's a short form podcast similar to.
You might want to record this for posterity and all that.
And all that. Similar to Isaac's Trek 365 that he's been doing all this year. The Prime Detective, short episodes, the premiere episode just came out earlier this week. But it's sort of like a cross between Star Trek and true crime. Mm. And it's really well produced. Grayson does an awesome job. Everyone, please go check it out. I think the first episode was like 8 minutes. 8 minutes out of your day. Go have some fun. You'll learn something. You will enjoy it. I'm quite sure. So
it's wonderful.
Go check that out.
That's what I live for.
We will get
my favorite subject.
We will get started in just a moment, but we have a new segment. I'm going to introduce a new segment.
A new segment.
A new segment called Listener Requests.
What?
Listen up.
Listener Requests. What do you think Listener Requests is about?
I want to say congratulations to Grayson on his new podcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Listener Requests, this new segment.
Okay.
New segment, Listener Request.
Does that matter?
This is not where listeners request things of us, but rather where we request things of our listeners. Mm. So the first thing I want to request,
interesting,
just to put it out there, is we were talking people going back and forth. I think it was Open Pike who suggested it. Somebody suggested that Dan put together a list of all his lists.
No trouble at all.
And that we should do an episode about that. I think that's a good idea.
Sure.
But I think it'd be fun to hear from people. And if you happen to remember any of Dan's lists, you can let us know if any stuck out in your memory.
Maybe we can do like the best lists.
Yeah. So write in at feedback@discotstartrek.com and let us know if you can recall any of Dan's lists that you would you would like us to go and, you know, just to list out, because Dan's going to do a list of lists. We'll do that at some point.
Yeah, a list of
I never fail.
Finest list.
And while we're at it, it just made me think it's been a while since.
None
of that. No.
I should have known.
It has been some time.
Oh,
since we've done.
It's been years and years.
And it's got. And it's not Star Trek.
I'm sorry.
So we have two episodes of It's Not Star Trek.
It was Alf, right?
Well, the first one was It's Got Pickles.
Pickles.
Where we eat a bunch of pickles.
Yeah.
And that's
was,
a classic
that
one.
Was a,
okay. That was a noisy one.
Well, well, yeah, as long as you're not grossed out by mouth noises.
It was a surprisingly
was crispy,
bloating one. Afterwards, I felt a little like.
It was yucky.
We
yeah.
ate a bunch of pickles.
I like pickles, but afterwards, it was a bit much.
Yeah. It was an eye-opening podcast.
Now
it was a butt-opening podcast later.
So, about 20 minutes in. And
it was pretty disgusting.
Dan's talking about butts. All right.
Professor, what the hell is going on here?
The second one was It's Got Alf, and that was a good one. So, but we want to do more. We've got some ideas, but if you have an idea of what
crab
you'd like
cakes.
Us to discuss, a not crab Star cakes. Trek thing. Jesse just wants to eat shit. He doesn't have to be out of food.
Oh, no, steaks. Ribeye steaks. It's crab cakes. And
it's got filet mignons and lobster.
Shrimp.
Lobster rolls.
Lobsters and hush puppy. Jesse, you'd get into a hush puppy thing.
Jesse, you know, just because they suggest it doesn't mean we don't have to pay for it. We still have to pay for it.
You know, hush puppies are never as good as I think they're going to be.
But except when they are, but you're right.
Yeah.
Except, I make some nice hush puppies.
You're chasing the dragon because every now and then you get a hush puppy and you're like, God damn, that's good.
Yeah,
because
often you're just kind of like, mm-hmm.
I don't think it can sustain a whole podcast. But if you have an idea for It's Not Star Trek, write us in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. Which is a little confusing, but that's the deal. It's not Star Trek, but feedback. It's got Star Trek. And let
us
know.
I don't think they're going to get that.
Let us know your suggestion. No,
do you think you can help me?
There's a smart group out there.
Yeah, okay.
Smart
they
group.
Are, okay. Yes. Of course.
All right. Okay, that's it from my end. Anything from your ends?
My rear ends.
Again with the butt stuff.
Okay,
Dan's in a butt stuff mood. He takes a nap, he gets all rested.
What are you talking about the ends?
Okay.
I thought this was the beginning.
Okay, no more butt stuff. Instead.
And Altrina vomited all over the table.
Mouth stuff.
Nice, she threw up.
Yeah, like, what's up with that story?
Well, that helps us. Dude, mate, we're trying to do a podcast here. Jesse and I are lunching out. We are lunching out.
Out to lunch.
So to preface our discussion, because we're get right in the beginning here, but to preface our discussion, it was kind of interesting because Dan's algorithm brought up Second Sight, and we're like, all right, haven't seen it in a while, can't quite remember the deal. And you look on the old internets and the Reddits and the IMDBs and stuff, and everyone's like, ah, this is a lame episode or whatever. But I gotta say, I enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed Sayotek. Character.
Yeah,
it's a good.
It's a middling episode, but it's comfy. But it's cozy.
It's a good idea,
and it is a good idea.
I don't think that guy's character, man, fuck that guy.
I know, that's why I enjoy it so much, because his character
is like really crazy.
His character, yeah, man. His character is so over the top and so ridiculously like in your face arrogant. He's so arrogant that he's almost like commenting on his own. It's almost like he's
self-aware.
He's self-aware. He's like commenting on his own arrogance through his arrogance. Yeah. Like he's like. And somehow that makes him even more arrogant, and it makes you wonder: do people like this actually exist?
They do,
and they do. Yeah. I'm pretty sure people like that do.
And like, and he told about like the recipe, and I'm like, what the?
Yeah, it went on forever. Dude.
Yeah, that super long recipe. And by the way, we should mention he's played by Richard Kind.
Oh, yeah,
what's the name of the scientist? I always forget the
Richard Kind.
No. The name of the scientist is what?
Sayotek.
Okay. So Dr. Sayotek.
Of course.
Dr. Sayotek is played by Richard Kiley. Yeah. Richard Kiley is a famous character actor throughout all time. But
on
I think
stage.
Where a lot of people will remember him, or at least a reference to him, is in the original Jurassic Park movie.
That's the one that's like.
That's
Jurassic. Park, yeah.
That's the theme to Jurassic
Park, yeah.
By Alan Silvestri. Is that how you pronounce it, Silvestri? Is it Alan Silvestri?
I think so.
I think it's Alan
That's
Silvestri,
how it's spelled.
Right? Yeah. Anyway, so...
Back to the future. Back to the future. Back.
So the theme to Jurassic Park sounds like somebody singing Back to the Future to the theme from Goonies.
Yeah.
Of course. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun. You guys are crazy. Dun,
dun. No, but Richard Kiley is referenced. You don't see him. You hear him because he's the voice of the DNA.
Is
no,
he like,
no, 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 no,
is
he, he's is not he the, I'm in your blood.
Oh, he's not that guy.
He's the voice.
He's not like dinosaurs.
Dino DNA.
Dinosaurs.
I'm in your blood.
But dinosaurs. Ever mentioned that taking my cat Pepper to the vet is kind of reminds me of the
this
scene
is
in
a fascinating,
Jurassic.
Fascinating.
Reminds me of the scene in Jurassic Park when they drop that cow into the Velociraptor cage.
Was it Velociraptor?
It was a goat.
It was a goat?
No, the goat was the T-Rex. They tied up the goat for the T-Rex.
Yeah, when they
drop the cow
in the Velociraptor cage, that's kind of like what happens when Pepper has to go to the vet.
Because they have to wrap her up and stuff.
Well, I have to put her in the crate and the crate starts shaking. It's really horrible.
And then
they're
like, shoot her! Shoot her!
And then she appears behind me and I'm like, clever girl.
No doubt that has happened.
Yeah. No, poor gal hates going to the vet, you know.
But. Wild digression, but entertaining, we'll allow it.
Well, we were talking about Jurassic Park.
I know we were. Okay. But the point was is Richard Kiley is the voice of the he's the tour guide voice when they're in the SUVs touring around.
Interesting.
And
I did not know that.
It's because Richard Hammond spared no expense. He hired Richard Kiley. I think he might have even been referenced in the original Jurassic Park book by Michael Crichton. Yeah.
As the voice?
As the voice of the tour. He may have been. Mm-hmm. I may be misremembering that, but I think he may have been, and then it's kind of
strange.
I read that he was in the original cast of Man of La Mancha.
Ah, yes, on Broadway.
Don Quixote.
Broadway.
On Broadway.
Broadway.
Yeah, so he originated the role of Don Quixote.
Speaking of weird... emphases on
the putting syllables? The emphasis on the wrong syllable. Gotcha.
This is more about emphasis on the wrong part of the sentence. Fena / Nadell, the actor who played her, which was
her name is
Judy Samuelson. Sally Richardson.
Sally Richardson Whitfield.
Who was interestingly
is Judy Samuelson?
She was in I Am Legend as she played Zoe Neville.
She's in a lot of stuff, actually.
And Anaconda's The Hunt for the Blood Orchard.
Yeah.
But she, like, her delivery for a lot of sentences was, she ignored her commas. Like, here's an example.
For the rest of my life, I've been gone too long as it is.
Like, how do you parse that sentence? For the rest of my life.
Is it mostly with the Nadell character, or is it with both?
It's with both of them.
Because she's an alien.
It's with both of them.
She has an alien pronunciation.
So for the rest, so the sentence
is 5 years at the New Zealand penal colony.
Cisco goes, how long do you plan on staying on New Helena? She goes, for the rest of my life, period. I've been gone too long as it is, period. But then she goes,
for the rest of my life, I've been gone too long as it is.
Sorry, I've been gone too long as it is, period.
Okay.
So it sounds like, makes it sound like she's saying for the rest of my, I've been gone too long. For the duration of the rest of my life, which doesn't make any sense. That's what it sounds like.
It's just like
saying.
Extra mopey. It's super mopey.
There's another one.
Beautiful, aren't they?
You at least understand what they're saying, but I'd say like, beautiful. You'd say like beautiful, aren't they? It's kind of like when people say like when people are like, I know, right? It's like what they should be saying is they should be saying, I know, right?
Yeah.
But everyone goes, I know, right?
Yeah,
I know, right?
Well, I think that's a bit of that one's more of a stretch because it's just a couple words. It's three words.
Beautiful, aren't they?
But I think it's just her style of sort of like. Glossing, maybe it's just her style, like how William Shatner has his own style. Hers is to sort of gloss over
it's
these
a,
commas
it's
and
a funny sort
periods.
Of cadence.
Here's another one.
Of course not. I'm Finna. You know that.
Of course, this is a little bit like
that one's better.
Of course not. I'm Finna. You know that. Of course not. I'm Finna. You know that. Of course not. I'm Finna. You know that. Of course not. I'm Finna. You know that.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's like interesting. Here's another one.
I guess that sounds kind of silly, doesn't it?
What I would say is that sounds kind of silly, doesn't it? That sounds kind of silly, doesn't it? She goes,
I guess that sounds kind of silly, doesn't it?
That sounds kind of silly, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but what's funny
you
is,
sound kind of silly.
I was
going to
say,
Jesse's
right. Like Dan's delivery, while maybe more accurate in terms of
I'm not
grammar,
trying, I'm
it
not
sounds
trying to
more
say
silly
that,
than what she's saying.
Yes,
she sounds less silly than
well,
you.
Because I'm
she
exact,
never sounds silly.
Because I'm hyperbolizing and I'm not criticizing her. I'm not saying she's wrong.
You're
I'm
also
saying,
making a weird smile when you say I'm, it. Like that, yeah, exactly. Like the folks listening
just,
can't see
I wanted
it, but,
to be made perfectly clear, I'm not saying she's wrong or criticizing. I'm saying it's interesting. It's different than what I expected.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I understand that.
Commander, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never met you before tonight. Yeah,
that's a good example.
I understand that's what you're getting at.
This is almost fast talking Burnham, but not quite.
Commander, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never met you before tonight.
It's proto fast talking.
Moderately talking Nadine.
Sally Nadine? Richardson Whitley.
Sally
Whitley? Whitley. Whitfield. Whitfield. Sally Richardson Whitfield.
Amanda Claudia Feen. Claudia Steen.
Are you just making shit up?
Claudia Steen. Is that a last name? Claudia Steen?
I mean, I don't believe so, but you know.
Sabotage.
I ain't no expert
holograms?
On this sort of thing.
Holograms?
Think, I do think, as we're clearly just doing one of those episodes where you jump around wherever the fuck we want to talk about.
Shit.
I thought that Sally...
Struthers.
Sally Richardson Whitfield... did a great job in this role, particularly differentiating between the two. Now, you have identified, Dan, a clear similarity.
See,
in,
the way you just said
that.
Just like
see, you. The way you just said that, you sounded like you were talking to Jesse, and you were like, Jesse, you've identified Dan. But you were saying, like, what you were saying was, you've identified, Dan.
This is similar to a
wow,
scene.
Wow, dude.
Similar to a scene.
This guy's like that Whitfield lady.
In Fawlty Towers. In that episode where the spoon delivery guy is mistaken for a hotel inspector. I believe the episode was called Hotel Inspector.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, she did a very good job, I thought, differentiating between the two characters.
She seemed really icy when she was on Adele. Like, you could tell when she was at the table and she was saying, like, it's his recipe. She was like, don't ask him, it's his recipe.
Well,
you could tell. You
I think
could
she
tell from,
had enough of that, dude.
Well, yeah, you could tell from that one line, you could tell, boy, she's really, like, you didn't need any explanation further. Yeah. You're just like, wow, she really doesn't.
But it's funny that, like, everybody else had enough of that, dude, like, way before, early, like.
It seemed, except for Dax. Dax seemed kind of amused
Dax,
by him.
Bashir.
And Bashir, yeah.
But Bashir is...
Even Sisko to an extent.
So Dax just thought it was amusing because she's lived a million lives, and so she's just like, I don't even give a shit. Like, this is hilarious to me. Sisko was like, at first thought it was like, whatever. But I think he was starting to grade on Sisko. Yeah. But Bashir was doing it because Bashir's also... I don't know if
Bashir
was...
He wants to be just like him one day.
Yeah, so I couldn't tell if Bashir was like... kissing up to him or if he was just kind of like I admired him, like his confidence, or both.
It's
probably.
Sort of like
I don't know.
Kira's like speaking for like the audience.
Yeah,
like,
Kira was
like, is it okay if like we're not here?
there's a certain charm to that type of thing, which of course can get grating, especially, and you see hints of his anger when he thinks that Dax isn't going fast enough. But at the dinner party or something like that, you know, there is a charm to the person who is so arrogant that they just admit it and they're like, I know.
Yeah.
I know I'm an asshole, and it kind of like, you know, it shouldn't resolve it, but it does. Now, Dan, we do have to take a break. So
okay.
I wanted to, whatever you're about to talk about, is this something that we should tease people with?
No, I was just going to quickly say about Kira is that when he was talking about, Tech was talking about a great terraformer needs the green thumb of a gardener, I have a painter, soul of a poet, and of course it doesn't hurt to be a raging, you know, egomaniac, and Kira goes, which makes you eminently qualified. That's like her boldest, that's really bold that she went at that part.
Like, that's you.
Yeah, but
he's like, yep.
But I do have two lists. One is called Arrogant Sayatek, and one is called Admission of Arrogance.
Is Sayatek. One like a list, or is it more like a collection of points?
Which I think is you did refer to one of your lists.
Is there like is it like a big list? And like
those are
I don't know.
Two good lists. That's a good tease.
What's he talking about?
That'll keep people listening through the break, through our 6 minutes of commercials for mattresses and websites and Bitcoin and all sorts of other stuff. So
you got me interested.
Nobody beats the Wiz.
We will be right back.
Must I remind you, Lieutenant, some of us have only one lifetime.
And we are back.
Commander, may I have a word with you?
Get some hot chocolate and tell me about it.
But
I see what you did there. You took two separate quotes and you sort of squished them together using digital editing techniques.
On screen.
You know who said that?
On screen.
Was that that weirdo?
Yeah, he's got a name.
The weirdo Lieutenant Goofy Balls. Right. What's his name? Lieutenant I saw his Goofy name. Balls. I saw his name, but I was confused by it. So.
It's Pearsall.
Pearsall.
P-I-E-R-S-A-L-L.
Maybe it was a misspelling of Pinesall.
I don't think so.
How did he get that assignment?
I don't remember him. I'm guessing he's been in other episodes.
No, but. He hasn't. He's assigned to that ship, that Prometheus ship.
Oh, Prometheus.
And Prometheus is, of course, apt. It's an apt
name. Of course!
making fire. Prometheus made fire. This guy's restarting a star. Mm-hmm. Star Trek can be a little on the nose sometimes, but it's okay. It teaches you stuff.
Yeah. There was a lot of laughter. He was laughing a lot.
Like, that guy's so ridiculous that it doesn't matter that he, like, sacrificed himself. It's like, of course he's gonna just go out, like, well, in a blaze of glory, like rekindling a fucking sun.
So,
like, here he goes.
So, yeah,
let there be light.
So I have two lists. One is called Arrogant Sayatek, and one is called Admission of Arrogant Sayatek.
Ooh, okay.
So I don't know if we want to go over.
Well,
is
there anything else on the agenda?
Yeah, are there any? We should give a heads up. Are there any that's in order?
There's one that's in order.
Are there any?
No duty or no
flip
duty.
Them up.
Ah, but you know what there is? And don't tell me the answer now.
Okay.
There was a countdown.
Ah, yes, there was.
There was like a countdown. Showtime versus real time.
Mm-hmm.
For the audience members who aren't aware, Dan is really into comparing.
Yeah.
It's a service. Mm-hmm. It's an excellent service. He will determine how closely.
What am I not supposed to tell you now?
The answer.
Okay.
Because I think that's something
a teaser.
We'd save that for later.
Okay.
Because the audience wants to know.
The audience wants to know.
I mean, they can go spool up the show right now and figure it out on their own, but it's going to be easier if they just continue listening to our episode. And then at some point during the remainder of the time we have with you today, Dan will reveal how close the countdown was in real time versus show time.
I hope so.
Which I think is an adequate way to explain what we're talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Of course.
Good.
But first, Dan has two lists. He's going to start with one list. And the list is the arrogant business?
Arrogant Sayatek.
Arrogant Sayatek.
And this goes over, I think, this will go over, I think, a lot of points in the episode.
Okay.
So it's a...
Points.
Well, it's a 20...
So this is going to act as a good framework...
It's full of points.
...for Jesse and I to respond and comment with our thoughts on the episode.
There's 20 points.
It's bristling with points.
There's 20 points.
I would have expected nothing less from you, Dan.
Okay. So number one... He goes into the flux generator even though it's dangerous. That's our first one.
Yeah. He's wearing a suit, though.
Yeah, he looks like Marty McFly.
Yeah, it's like a flux capacitor.
Flux capacitor.
But yeah, right. Hey.
The flux generator, the flux capacitor. It's what makes time travel possible, / it's what makes rekindling a dead star possible.
And they're
that's impossible.
And they're all kind of watching him, like, being like, this guy's amusing. Yeah. Like, haha. Yeah. Doesn't he know he can be killed?
Oh, silly. Number two, Sisko says, Professor, I'm a great admirer of your work. Sayatek, good, a man of intelligence and taste. I can see we're going to get along famously. Mm-hmm. Which, interestingly, can be seen both ways, actually.
How do you mean?
That actually, because it's hard to go with the list of arrogant Sayatek versus admission of arrogant Sayatek.
This could have gone on either list.
Yeah, that could
have
gone.
Do you have any overlap between the list, or did you make them exclusive?
No, there is overlap. This is number one on the mission of arrogance.
Oh, so this does go
gotta
on
be.
List.
Yeah, because it is an arrogant thing to say, but at the same time, like, it's such an over-the-top, like, a man, like, when someone is like, let's talk about you, and you're like, ah, you must be really smart to want to talk about me. Mm-hmm. It's, like, so, like, in your face that he's aware that that's an arrogant thing to say, you know? And so...
You gotta be.
And he says, we're gonna get along famously because we're gonna talk about me. I mean, that's, like, when people get to a certain level of arrogance, they have to be self-referential about it.
Right.
And that's what he was doing, but it's still arrogant.
Because
it
takes effort to keep that arrogance going.
There's one thing that I'm kind of curious if you have on your list, because it may be an implicit thing, and so I'm interested. So remind me if I forget. Remind me that there was something about something arrogant about him that may not be on your list.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
That's another tease.
On the list. Anyways,
another tease for the audience.
Anyway, so there's a difference between saying like, I'm so good at shit versus like, we're gonna talk about me.
So this
great.
Is number two on this list?
Yes, this is number two. Shit. And what I was saying is there's a difference between saying like, I'm super great versus like, oh, you wanna talk about me? That's of course, that's the best thing to talk. Yeah. It's like almost ironic, but it's still arrogant. Anyway. Number three, Sisko, my son and I have to remind you, Patrick, of something I may have missed on my list.
Okay.
That's what you said? That's what you told me to do.
Yeah, but like after the list.
Yeah, after the list.
Because it may be on your list.
Yeah, right.
Don't be pissed.
It may be on one of these lists.
Yes, maybe, but it might. But we might have missed what's on the list.
It would not be on the second list.
There's no way to be sure.
The thing I'm thinking of would only be on the first list.
Yeah.
Because the second list is where he admits that he's arrogant. With the first, and so item number two of this list is item number one of the other list. But we'll make that clear when we get to the other list.
I wish I could believe that.
So, number three.
Cisco says, my son and I visited Blue Horizon on the way to Deep Space Nine. I must say I was impressed. Satek says, of course you were. I created the place, and even I'm impressed. Yeah. That's like a twofer.
Wait,
like,
when did they do that shit? We didn't see that.
No, that was just exposition. But that's like a twofer because he's saying, of course you were impressed, and it's like even so great that I'm impressed at my own shit. Number four. The fact that number four, also to that point, to the fact that he named his creation Da Vinci Falls.
Yeah.
And he continues to talk about how amazing it is. Yeah. He even goes, I wouldn't mind seeing my own creation again myself. It's like,
did you put a little Italian on that by accident? Because you said my own creation.
No. Oh, I didn't mean to. I was stumbling over my words.
Da Vinci. Oh, okay. Because it sounded like you were like, I would like to see my own invention.
I don't think it was like a Freudian slip. I think I just stumbled over my words.
With the buffalo mozzarella.
But if I wanted to.
Buffalo mozzarella.
It's like he should have called it Saitic Falls.
But if I wanted to play along, yeah. I would, but I didn't. Yeah. But it's like basically saying, like, if I said, man, you got to hear this song I wrote. It's amazing. I can't wait to hear my own song again. It's so amazing. But he named it Da Vinci Falls. Yeah. Like how pretentious is that? It's like my work is so beautiful that it evokes imagery of Leonardo da Vinci. Like,
yeah, that's,
you know,
pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Number five of his latest project, Dax says, let's hope it works. Right now it's a promising theory. Saitek says, of course it'll work. I never fail. Mm-hmm. To his credit, he did admit failing once after that. But he didn't like failing, and apparently he's so good that if he decides to do something, it will happen, including not failing.
Exactly. So the admission of failing was a way to actually make him even more arrogant.
Right.
He has the godlike power of learning the distaste of failure and choosing never to do it again.
Which makes me wonder if he actually did really fail at something, or if he...
Yeah, he probably destroyed a planet.
Or what did he fail at? I mean, I don't think he's talking about his marriage in that instance.
Probably murdered a bunch of aliens.
Because he failed his marriage like 9 times.
That
so
seems,
that
seems like...
I will do it 9 times. it seemed like he was referring to some other thing, but it sounds like he just made that up so he could, like we said, make himself seem like, well, I decided not to fail anymore.
I think Kira should have kicked him right in the balls.
Yeah, probably. Probably. That would have been...
I hope so.
Would have been perfectly called for.
Yeah.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. So Saitic says, and number six, you should be glad you're coming with me, Lieutenant. Mm-hmm. This will be my crowning achievement, giving birth to a star. That's interesting. Because they make the birth imagery and crowning.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice that at the time.
Yeah.
Crowning, because, you know,
like
baby,
you made that joke
because a baby crowns.
Yes,
I've heard that.
Yeah, yeah. Have you heard about that?
y'all hear about
it? It was pretty disgusting.
It is pretty disgusting.
And Altrina vomited all over the table.
It's surprising.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not trying to body shame people.
No, it's not a body shame. I think it's okay to say certain bodily functions when they are not part of your regular day to day experience can be surprising.
It's disgusting, but it's also beautiful.
Yeah. Sure,
That's another way to put it.
Is it beautifully disgusting or disgustingly beautiful?
It's, I don't know. It's quite an undertaking. Sure.
Nature be wilding.
Yeah,
no, it's cool. It's pretty
nature
cool.
Nature be
no,
wilding.
It's cool. Let me go on record as saying crowning is cool.
All right.
Okay.
You're down with the crown.
if crowning is cool, then I'm Miles Davis.
Yeah. Oh man. Goo. So she
shampoo
said,
is better.
So he goes, you should be glad you're coming with me, Lieutenant. This will be my crowning achievement, giving birth to a star. Even I will have a hard time topping that one. It's like, instead of saying, do you like my song? It'd be like me saying, you're so lucky you got to listen to this amazing song I wrote. Once again, this with the song metaphor. But
of
like,
course, it does, again, a nicely written episode. It does preface and prepare the audience for this character's eventual path that he's chosen, because of course later it talks about the Klingon poetry and all that. We can talk more detail later, but the point is it is interesting to set up this character, this bombastic asshole, but also at a stage where he's like, shit, I don't know what I could do next, and then he realizes what he could do next is, you know, fucking go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, true that.
Yeah,
that's true. I
yeah,
mean,
man.
Which item number were we on? I forget.
With that, now we're on seven.
Seven. All right. Seven out of 20.
So he's bloviating about being a terraformer. He goes, "A great terraformer needs the green thumb of a gardener, the eye of a painter, and the soul of a poet. And of course, it doesn't hurt to be a raging egomaniac." And then he's like, remember, he's laughing after everything he says.
He's kind of like an architect.
And
I
so,
mean, well, I mean, presumably we'd have to have some science biology.
Biology.
I would hope so.
Biology.
Some earth science.
Sounds complicated.
Some biology science.
And then I mentioned that Akira wasn't hiding her disdain when she goes, "Which makes you imminently qualified." No. Number eight, Saitic says, "Come on, come now, Lieutenant. Nothing of worth was ever created by a pessimist." Sisko goes, "I don't know about that." Van Gogh, Beckett, Yuraka. "I wouldn't exactly call them optimists." Yeah. Saitic says, "Precisely, and look at their work, dark and dreary and dismal. Art should be an affirmation of life. For example, take my own work in the field." There's a few things to unpack there. Yeah.
Well, they're still affirmations of life.
Yeah. Is Yuraka a made-up one? Is that one of those ones like where they have like two real people and then they have like the alien?
The future.
You know, that's the Star Trek style. You do two known historical people, and then you add in somebody from the 21st or the 22nd century.
Yeah, dude.
Yuraka was a famous artist who had a pessimistic nature to his work. In 2370, Benjamin Sisko referred... Okay. Yeah.
So he's got
to
be a Star Trek artist.
Star Trek.
So the thing... Just make up some artists. The kids love that shit.
So, Yuraka. So to break this down, he makes a judgment about what art should be that is based on the premise of his own work, basically saying, like, "I'm making real art, and this is what real art is."
That's not real art. Yeah.
B, the example he uses when talking about proper art is his own work. So not only is it this type of art he's into is real art, his own work, he's like, "If you want to look at real art, look at my shit." Yeah. Number C.
Because I build planets.
Number C, which can be...
Assholes.
Slurdy Bartfast.
Which can be broken down into two parts. C says, "We find out that his thing is making his art giant, which is a reflection of his ego." So number one to that, he likes giant because it helps people, like, it's easier for people to look at his shit more because it's all big. Yeah. And number two, he assumes that more of his work would be seen to be better. And
you're talking about big shits, and then you said number two.
Yeah, I did. I did. You're right.
I did the butt stuff this
time. Poopy poops.
You did the butt stuff.
Sorry about that.
It was pretty disgusting.
It was pretty
But anyway, so look, he likes things large because it lets people look at it better, and he likes them large because he thinks more is better, and more of his stuff means more of his must be better because it's his.
Very clearly an American.
Nine. He's written 9 books on himself.
Oh, real quick.
9 times.
Real quick, just going back to, with the Van Gogh comparison.
Yeah.
I don't think Starry Night's a dreary, pessimistic painting, is it? It's not like...
I don't think that Van Gogh's work is generally pessimistic.
Yeah, I don't
dark know. He was dreary and dismal.
It's like a little
blurry. He was a sad dude.
Demise.
Yeah, plenty of sad
dudes. His work is quite,
I think it's a faulty premise. He's asserting a faulty premise, which is basically what Dan was saying. So, number 9.
He's asserting a faulty premise while in a faulty tower.
Yes.
Basil
Faulty.
Number 9. He's written 9 books on himself. That's appropriate for number 9. Yeah. Anyways, his autobiography is not just like a book. It's like 9 volumes of like giant books.
Which it was 9 volumes.
There's people who do that type of shit, and it is funny.
Yeah.
Although often they,
he Prousted himself.
There's a lot of a lot of interesting stuff.
But you see a pattern emerging about this guy. 10, he's being kind of a dick about Deep Space Nine's food selection. Instead of saying like, "Oh, we're going to make you some food. It's all made from hand," and just like leaving it at that, he has to compliment himself and
it's not made from
and
shit.
And put them down at the same time to make for maximum superiority, right? He's like, "My food's great." Mm-hmm. "No, you don't want to eat that shit you're used to. Eat my amazing food," you know?
And as a side note, it was fun that he used, in his recipe, he used Kelvin, 500 degrees Kelvin, which is 226 degrees Celsius.
That ain't all that hot.
It is 440.33 degrees Fahrenheit.
That is quite hot.
But yeah, but it's not that hot.
No, it's not.
Like a pizza oven's hotter.
Kelvin
like,
always has a higher number.
Number 11, he takes a minute to compliment his wife's cooking, which is at first seems a bit selfless, but then a bit later we learn that he made the recipe.
Yeah.
And also to him, complimenting his own wife is kind of like complimenting himself, like it's all his doing in the end, you know. 12, even his, and this is the recipe part, even his recipe sounds pretentious. It took him years to perfect, first of all. And
some kind of funky tubers and layers.
Well, so here's
Wakanda meat or something.
Wakanda meat.
Here's what we hear about the recipe. It's the secret, you see, is to sear the kalo roots slightly before layering them over the slices of roasted warun.
Warun.
Then the most important thing is the broth. 1 liter of clear rumal stock, a tumbler and a half of gremish, 2 clusters gremish. Of Vulcan red
gremish.
Spice.
Fuck that.
Half a dozen humat pods and a dash of ice salt.
Since when do the Vulcans use any kind of spice?
Then you reduce it in an Andorian boiler,
yeah.
Cook it exactly 500 degrees Kelvin, and then just pepper to taste. Any questions? And so, like, he overstates the importance of each step.
Yeah. Andorian boiler.
He probably adds steps that he doesn't.
Any questions?
And he probably doesn't add steps that he doesn't need to. It kind of reminds.
Stand up so I can kick you in the butt.
Okay. Let me finish my sentence, please.
He's on a roll.
I'm just like, I'm saying something.
All right.
It's okay, Jesse. You're allowed. You can talk, Jesse. You can talk. Just keep mumbling in there. Like, sorry. Okay, I'll move on. I won't make a thing of it.
All right.
He overstates the importance of each step, and he probably adds steps that he doesn't need to. And it kind of remind me of the secret to spaghetti and meatballs is a tablespoon of orange juice.
Yes. Yes.
So
on
it's
the
like
venerable classic spaghetti. King of the Hill.
Yeah.
King of the Hill.
It's like it took you years to just like add a list of shit. Like
orange juice.
Yeah. 13, as we found out, he laughs at all his own jokes. There's a ton of sound files. and then when he says things, which I've already played these.
Of course. Of course. Of course.
So all his jokes he laughs at, but he also laughs.
He's a funny dude, I guess.
He also laughs when someone is overwhelmed by him. Like when he gave his dinner recipe to O'Brien, and O'Brien was like, maybe you should write that down. He was, his response was. His response was, ha, 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 ho. Yeah. It's like, I see I have overwhelmed you, you know?
Because that's the most amusing.
But, like, you could say, like, maybe it's also, like, a crutch in a way. Mm. The laughter is a crutch. And that gets back to his list about, like, admittance of arrogance in a certain way. Because a lot of this is actually performative. You know, just, like, is he being arrogant because he thinks he's so smart? Well, yes, but it's also kind of, like... There's a lot of insecurity there, you know, especially when it comes to his wives, because like you can tell he's like really insecure about his whole wife situation and stuff like that. So, you know, when someone is that over the top arrogant, are they trying to cover up for something or do they act arrogant because they hope it'll convince themselves? Like, have you ever heard people say like you should compliment yourself all the time and then you'll just start believing it, you know, or you should smile all day long because then you'll just naturally be happy. Like, does...
What?
Does changing the symptom affect the sickness or whatever? Meaning, like, if he's confident, if he pretends to be confident, will that make him confident? There's probably
fake it till you make it.
There's probably a mixture of stuff going on there. But anyway, 14. Satek says, "Must I remind you, Lieutenant? Some of us have only one lifetime." That was when he was getting impatient.
That was a Dax joke.
That was a Dax.
That was a good Dax joke.
That was a good Dax joke.
Like you can tell he's a smart guy because, I mean, he's an asshole, but he's a smart guy because he finds a special way to insult everybody.
Right.
It's like custom designed for that person and is also funny.
Yeah, it is. But it's also a part of his pattern because he could have just said, hurry up.
It's too bad Worf wasn't there yet.
Like, he had to make a big production.
He has to be performative, like you said.
Yeah, he has to make a big production of everything. He seemed that was the only time he seemed uncharacteristically stressed, other than when Nadell shit in the bed. But like,
it was pretty disgusting.
15, walking onto the bridge to do the thing, at the end. He's mid conversation with Sisko about his work.
To do the thing at the end.
You know, where they're going to the bridge and they were like looking at the star to set the star on fire, gotcha. Reignite the star. And him and Sisko are walking on the bridge. It's the kind of thing where you hear them mid conversation walking into scene. Yeah.
And media res, I guess they would call it.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the middle of the scene.
And so, of course, they're talking about his work. He's saying, I'm telling you, Commander, by the time I was through with New Helana, it was a veritable paradise. And so number A, he's talking about his work. Number B, he's talking about how it's talking about how it's just like the most amazing shit ever, of course.
Yeah, so Dan's doing a numbered list. So the numbers are the main level, but then like underneath, there's like A's and B's and Roman numerals and some other business.
Yeah,
lowercase I's.
We're getting close to the end. I'm trying to hurry this
along. I heard Dan's going crazy.
Oh, and by the way,
bah, 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 bah,
interesting to me, he's a terraformer. And look, I get get it. I know there's a plausible explanation here, but it's a bit of a mixing of metaphors of a type, because he's a terraformer, where you tend to think of taking a big dead planet and turning it into a live planet. But then he's talking about how he terraformed some planet that already had people on it. Ooh. I guess the hell, you know, and they made a statue of him. They loved him, and yeah, I was a little confused by that, because I thought, generally speaking, the terraforming is sort of like a dead planet thing.
Maybe he made a terra
dome. But that could be an unfair assumption on my part. Maybe he used his terraforming skills to help reverse some sort of ecological disaster or something like that. So I can definitely imagine a scenario where that's okay. But it was a little bit incongruous in this sense, where the whole metaphor was turning dead things into live things, and now it's confused a little bit, because he's done terraforming on a planet with people. Again, unless I'm reading too much.
That could have been
his
mistake.
And maybe he made a fresh planet for them and they came from some other planet. Like I said, there's ways to make it work. But I thought I'd point it out, because I'm sure it aggravated somebody else out there.
It's interesting that a lot of times when someone's this arrogant, they're a phony, but he's actually not a phony.
No, it's earned arrogance.
He's for real.
Which sometimes can be the most obnoxious kind, because like, you can dismiss somebody who's arrogant but hilariously doesn't deserve it because they're a fuck up, but it could almost be more aggravating when you're like, well, I gotta give the guy fucking credit, because he's like actually doing the things he says he's doing.
Right.
It's a shame that he has to be a dickhead about it, but he's being a funny dickhead at least.
So Sisko says, what do you call this, your crowning achievement? And Satek says, don't remind me, Commander, my entire life has been a series of escalating triumphs. It's what I live for, knowing that no matter what I achieve,
don't remind me,
there's always another triumph waiting for me. So A, don't remind me, acts like victory is a burden. B, talks about how his whole life is a victory. C, goes on to complain that he's so victorious that he's won at everything.
Oh, you know, it's so tiresome.
Woe is him being so excellent at excellence.
Woe is me.
He's so excellent at excellence that there's nothing left worth excelling at. D, the only way he could explain his dilemma is by quoting Klingon poetry, which isn't included there, but he starts quoting Klingon poetry. And in that poem, he plays the part of the warrior whose only mistake was being too good. Yes. And then the last
woe to the warrior who kills all his friends or whatever.
But it was funny.
His enemies.
But it was funny at the end, because Sisko fucked him up by finishing his quote. You could tell he was like all kind of like, he was put off by that. He goes,
you stole my punchline. Basically.
Yeah, basically, right.
Yeah. You got to at that point. That was good for Sisko.
Yeah, so there was a whole thing where he goes, there's a line he goes, Satek goes, of course. Well, you can imagine how grateful the Halanans were. Which part was this, actually?
Which number is this?
Grateful the... This is like number something or other.
Are we good?
Okay, Satek... this was at... what were we talking about? You, of course, my favorite subject. Where was that? You had just finished terraforming New Halana, of course. Okay, this is number 17. He goes, of course. Well, you can imagine how grateful the Halanans were. He's a saint. Endless parades and receptions. He's a god.
Oh, right.
Got to be a bit of a bore, actually. Too loved, too much, and too often.
Too many parades for this guy.
But then I met Nadelle. She was the daughter of a local dignitary. She was utterly... And she pauses there. He goes, she was utterly...
Utterly.
And you think he's going to say something like beautiful or enthralling. Mm-hmm. He goes, she was utterly infatuated with me from the very start. It's not even
how could you not be?
It's not even reciprocal. So he says, I can't say I blame her, actually, because he would love himself too, and he does. The first time she saw me, I was surrounded by crowds of people unveiling a statue they'd commissioned in my honor, because he's just so great. I could tell from the start she was something special because she liked him. And you know she
in statues.
And you know she'd never been off world before she met me. He's so great to have granted her such a fortunate life. She should feel lucky he showed up and picked her, basically.
She had funny ears.
And this is the time
she was an alien.
At this point, Sisko is getting a little bit... This is the point where Sisko starts getting sick of him. You can tell Sisko's getting pissed. Almost done. 18. At the end, when he kills himself, it's the culmination of his arrogance. Jesse, you were talking about this earlier, actually. He makes himself sort of a martyr, kind of. Mm-hmm. You could say unnecessarily. It allows Nadelle to be free, but that's not really why he's doing it. When asked what he's doing, he says he's making history, and that this should be recorded for posterity. Though at that point,
you know it's fucking being recorded.
Yeah, I know. He just has to announce
it's a big science ship. It's got one of them big science pods on top.
Yeah, this is almost an admission of arrogance, though, because when he says this should be, he's almost like making a little secret joke to himself at this point. But it is still arrogant as fuck. Like, you know, he's like, yeah, he's sacrificing. Like, what else could he do to top himself and be the best at everything? He would kill himself just to, like, show how important he is. 19, he wrote his own obituary. He's at this point, he's full
on. I like that.
But yeah, and because at this point, he's full on admitting he's a bullshitter when he says, I wrote it myself. After all, I couldn't leave such an important document to some stranger. But that's he's totally admitting, like, he's a bullshitter.
I'm thinking of doing the same thing. It's a good idea.
But then he's back to his old self when he says that he wants it sent to the Daystrom Institute. And he says, and then when he says, and he's serious, I think, serious about this line where he says, let the record state he sacrificed himself on the altar of science, absolutely. You know? And then at the end, he ends with, keep your eyes on the view screen, Commander. You'll never see anything like this again. And then he says, let there be light.
Yes. first words of God or the narrator in Genesis.
Yeah.
In the Bible.
So
not the band.
Yeah. So he leads up with like, this is going to be the most amazing shit ever. Yeah. I'm God. Yeah.
So, I am a golden God.
Yeah. He might as well have said, fuck you, God.
That's a great list. And you got close to what I was talking about.
Okay.
What I was going to refer to, Dan. You got really partly have it in there because. Because what stood out to me was that one of his arrogant things he did revolved around him being the sole cause of his wife's problem. And what's interesting is the episode essentially shows us that that's true or seems to take the position that that is indeed kind of true. Although, as Sisko noted, Sisko's like, we think we figured out a way around it. But from Kylie's perspective, his suicide, yeah, I agree, Dan, partly it was that whole Blaze of Glory thing, but he was like, my wife's serious problem is also about me.
Yeah,
everything's
right.
about me. Yeah. My wife's illness is about me. Her hallucination of being all whatever is about me. Everything's about me, me, me. Mm-hmm. So that was an implicit form of arrogance that he did admit. So that's why it wouldn't be on that other list that's coming up. It's going to come up in the third break.
Okay.
Because we're about to take another break.
And this list was only 8 points, so it's going to be much quicker. And some of the points are kind of repeated, but only because some of the arrogant things he said had like a yin and a yang to them.
I'm looking forward to what that's going to be all about. And by the way, folks, don't forget, Dan still has not revealed the whole countdown thing, how close it was in real time versus showtime. So we'll get to all of that and conclude our discussion of Second Sight when we return in the third break, which will be soon because we will be right back.
I'll be right there. I have to meet with Chief O'Brien.
Chief O'Brien?
And we're back.
She was wearing a... She was wearing red.
Oh, shit.
She was wearing red.
Red.
I love Roctagina.
Sorry, those weren't actually good comeback sounds, but I kind of screwed up my order, so I had to improvise.
Well, those...
I love Roctagina.
Those clips did remind me of...
One Chiralton tea with a double twist of lemon.
When he was ordering that tea...
Double twist.
The look Kira gave over to... not gave him, but the look she made kind of looked like, did the captain get laid?
I know, it was like weird.
The computer.
I think the captain got laid last night.
Now, when he said a double twist of lemon, I'm wondering if he meant like a true restaurant like twist. Because when you ask for a twist of lemon, it's just the peel. Mm-hmm. It's not like the wedge, like with juiced into it. It's the peel that's often... It's often zested with just the peel juice. So do you think he meant a double peel twist, or do you think he meant like wedges? That's what I'm wondering.
I'm guessing probably the latter. His dad is a chef, a prominent chef.
You mean the former? You mean the former?
No.
The latter.
No.
The juice?
The first thing I said was the peel.
Oh, okay, then that. I think the restaurant style. Okay.
Yeah.
That would be my
guess. His dad is a chef in New Orleans.
Exactly.
But people don't usually think of putting lemon wedges... lemon twists with tea. They often do lemon wedges with tea, don't they?
I don't know. I think I've seen lemon twists because sometimes you don't want it to overpower. Now I'm not.
That's
not
true.
You got
a
lemon peel and a sazerac.
I'm not much into the. I'll take a lemon peel, a lemon twist that style in a good old sazerac would be perfect.
That's
in
New Orleans.
In my tea, I don't need it, but I'm an Earl Grey drinker.
Like so. I never like lemon, like Coke with the lemon twist. I didn't like that.
I like lemon and Coke.
I don't hate it, but it's not my main.
I don't mind it in like a soda fountain
cherries
in a soda fountain I don't mind squeezing lemon. I wouldn't choose to do it, but I wouldn't like be like, this is terrible. But when they had the pre,
I wouldn't choose
when
to
they
squeeze.
Had the when they had the pre-packaged like pre-made cans of Coke with the lemon in it. I didn't like those.
So you'd
actually
reserve it for when you're going down to your local soda jerk.
Well, I wouldn't if I was getting a Coke. I wouldn't put lemon in at all.
Yeah, did you like said, vanilla?
But
Coke?
You, but you said that you go down to your local soda jerk.
You just want to say soda jerk.
Obviously. You go down to your local soda jerk, and then you might be okay with a little squeeze of lemon. In
no,
there.
No, no,
because it's a special occasion. You got a guy with a paper hat,
hat,
and a real long fucking spoon, doing some soda making magic with some syrup.
I don't think so.
Some syrup and some fresh, fresh business soda.
Stirring
jerk.
It up.
Soda not
jerk.
At all.
Long fucking spoon.
Everyone know what I'm talking about? No. Look it up. Look
not
up.
At all.
Look up
not
soda jerk. Precise. YouTube Yoda soda jerk.
Something wrong?
Not Yoda jerk.
Yoda jerk.
Yoda jerk's a whole different, that's a whole genre.
Jerk are you?
It's a different franchise and it's a pornography genre.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I said Yoda jerk.
So then what's the problem? So then what's the problem? So then what's the problem?
Benjamin, I'm so frightened. Benjamin, I'm so frightened. Benjamin, I'm so frightened.
So then what's the problem?
She says something about fried meat?
Yeah, I think so.
Fried meat.
Fried meat. Benjamin, where's the fried
Benjamin
meat?
Benjamin fried meat.
I know we got your list coming in a second, but since you reminded me of this Fena person, and she was saying something about, like, I want to see everything. Mm-hmm. Like, she was like, oh, no, I want to see your penis.
Oh.
She wanted to see Sisko's penis, right?
Yeah, probably.
Well, I mean.
Adele is a psycho-projective telepath.
Psycho! She's a psycho!
She might still want to see penis.
Adele is a psycho-projective. Adele is a psycho projective
sorry.
What are you doing? Oh, you're trying to get
Nadelle is a psycho.
Doesn't really work.
Nadelle is a psycho.
Sounds stupid.
Well, its cadence is a little odd.
Stupid.
Before the end of the show, we should talk about Sisko and Jake.
Good.
Good. Good.
Another grand example. Of course, Deep Space Nine was really good at this. The relationship between Sisko and Jake is fantastic.
Good.
One of the things that makes this episode worthwhile watching because it starts out with the anniversary of Jennifer's death of Sisko. Sisko's
that
wife.
Was kind of an interesting intro because it didn't have anything to do with the rest of the episode except for the fact that it sort of brought you into Sisko's like love romantic.
It contextualized his frame of mind. Yeah. Which is another TNG.
Okay, but don't laugh.
We did that episode too. But yeah, it contextualizes his frame of mind and also gives us this opportunity to have this wonderful scene between Sisko and Jake. And the thing was, is like, they didn't have to do this, but it makes the episode better. It makes the whole series better because it's one of many examples of a demonstration of Sisko, of a really high quality father-son relationship.
Which she was just like you.
Does not happen a lot in Star Trek.
That's right.
Star Trek is all about like bad dads.
Most people that are fathers in Star Trek are not so hot.
And
Worf is the worst father on the planet.
Oh my god. He fucking Sarek. So ashamed of his son.
Yeah, Sarek is all
Kirk's
goofy.
No,
isn't
Gaylor.
Like Worf eternally like ashamed of his son?
Yeah,
like from
he's
when
totally
he's a, when he's a kid up to into DS9. Yeah. Like his son's kind of a fuck up in DS9 though,
yeah.
Isn't he?
Yeah, yeah,
it is. But like I mean Sisko even like I was the scene when he's saying goodnight to Jake and he like kisses him on the head. Like you wouldn't see Hank Hill doing that.
And they both say I love you.
Like Hank Hill like loves Bobby.
Well, come on. Now.
But it's but dysfunctional.
Like, but it's like he wouldn't see Hank Hill kiss Bobby on the head. But Benjamin Sisko is so confident with himself and his love for his son that he can kiss him like lovingly on his head and you buy it.
It is a really wonderful representation of a certain type of masculinity that I think is. I mean, I'm biased, of course, because I think I sort of adhere to this form of masculinity, which is a
I may take you up on that.
It revolves around kindness, and that sort of thing. And it's just, I don't know, I just did not want it to go uncommented that we get to really enjoy this. And it's also so well written. This dream that Jake has.
Is, what we have is a dream.
Is relatable and upsetting,
even though
it takes place on the station. We're familiar enough with the station geography to appreciate the type of dream he's having. We've all had some sort of similar stress dream. And then my favorite part about the whole thing is this whole time we know that Sisko's up because he's ruminating on the death of his wife, the anniversary of the death of his wife. Jake comes out and the whole conversation with Jake has nothing to do with Jennifer. Except we know it does, and Jake knows it does because at the end he says, I miss her dad.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of revealing that even though he said he didn't know what the deal was with the dream, he understands that this dream, again, revolved around this death of
I think Jake overstated the stupidity of his dream because it wasn't like, because Jake's dream was like, I was on the station, I didn't know where, I was going through corridors, but it led to some other direction. See, I told you it was stupid. That's not that stupid. That's a common dream. Yeah.
But he's a kid and doesn't realize that. But that's why I like this. I liked it because it was a realistic.
He's just trying to downplay.
Yeah, it's a real.
Because he's with his dad.
It's a realistic example of, yes, I 100% agree that I think there's that. His dad is teaching him this good masculinity by saying, don't be shy about this. It doesn't matter.
How old is Jake in this episode?
14, I think.
I would have been like, it was kind of weird. If I said anything, I would say it was weird. Not that it was stupid.
Yeah, why is he still dressed so funny?
You're now. He's in the future.
No, but I'm talking about if I was 14. When I was 14, I would have said 14. It was weird. Because like when you're telling dreams, it's like, and then I was like walking down a puffy marshmallow, but it was actually a pillow made out of knives. And then I jumped on it.
And then the knives were all penises.
And the penis knives went in my brain, but my brain was actually a big pile of mashed potatoes. It was so weird.
I'm fairly certain Dan is describing an actual dream he had at some point. But I would.
Okay, but don't laugh.
I would counter Dan that in my view, I think 14 is right around the exact age where people are learning that feelings and thoughts that they have are not unique to them. I think that there's a period of time where people have these thoughts and they think, oh, I'm a weirdo or I'm a genius or whatever. They're like, oh my God, there's something different about me because of this thought I had that's so unique. But now you're also interacting with the wider world. So then you learn, oh, wait a second. This experience I had is actually very common. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of examples of that. So for me, this rang is really true. A realistic portrayal.
Something Sisko said to Jake, he says, Sisko goes, come on, tell me about this weird dream, which Sisko calls it weird. Yeah. Jake calls it stupid. Well,
okay. In your favor there, Dan.
But that's not what I was getting
Evidence
at.
In your favor.
Evidence.
Evidence!
There we go.
Chief O'Brien.
Belana's on it.
Chief O'Brien?
Holograms.
Sabotage. Hologram.
I'm not joking, Belana's on it.
Holograms?
I'm not joking, Lee.
There we are.
Caught me off guard.
Bringing out the hits.
So Sisko says, come on, tell me about this weird dream. Jake says, it's stupid. And then Sisko goes, maybe so. But the thing about dreams is, if you talk about them, they kind of go away faster. Are you sure about that?
Is it though?
It's called, you sure about that?
Are you sure about that?
You sure about that? That if Dead. You talk about a dream, they go away faster?
Well,
you sure about that?
I think here the question is, what does he mean by go away? If he means, does it mean you forget the dream?
Or
no, I don't think so.
No, but you can deal with the dream.
Yeah, I think maybe what he meant is like when you go back to sleep, you're not going to re-enter that dream.
If somebody coaches you through, you know, it's like, it's your dream. You can be like, hey, you know, control your dream. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or just hop down to the old holosuites.
Just wake the fuck up again.
Go down to the holosuites and do some nasty stuff that I'm sure Quark is recording.
Nasty.
Good old Benjamin Sisko.
You see, Quark was like...
He's my number one dad.
He's my number one dad.
He truly is.
He's my number one dad.
He's my number one dad.
Dad.
What does that have to do with anything?
Because Benjamin Sisko is Jake's number one dad.
Oh, word. Okay,
Jesse,
I'm sorry.
You may now continue your point, Jesse, if you can recall it. You were en media point.
Well, I was en media point, then Jesse went en media point, and then I finished en media point or whatever.
Quark was drinking out of a funny vessel that looked like a bong from back in the day. That was like a bong that like got left at like Mike's house back in the day.
Man,
I think it was yours.
Yeah.
It was like blue and plastic.
That whole scene,
I know exactly
that
what
whole,
you're talking about.
That whole scene between Quark and Sisko. This episode is just full of bullshitters because like that whole scene between Quark and Sisko was almost unnecessary because Quark ends it with like, don't forget the holosuites are always open. And at first I was like, is this going to come back in the episode later? But no, it was just showing that Quark was being an asshole and trying to like, his whole sympathy play was just to like get him to give him some money to go on the holosuites.
Well, sort of. He was also just talking about like, saying Sisko should go jerk off, basically. It's like the future version of saying just go crank one out.
So you think that's what he meant by holosuites are
100%. Open? It was like in Pulp Fiction when Vincent is like, you're going to go home, jerk off, that's all you're going
to
do.
I thought it was just like Quark trying to make a sale, basically.
I think both things can be true. Quark is a multi-layered character.
Anyways, that was an interesting scene because it almost wasn't necessary, but like it added. But I appreciated that it was there.
There were a series of one-on-one interactions between Sisko.
I thought it was kind of nice that Quark was like, "Hey, dude."
It was Sisko.
I thought Quark was being a bullshit.
Yeah, but think about it. Sisko had one-on-one interactions with Jake, with Quark. With Odo, with Jadzia, with Kira, and in almost every one of them, they ended with the other person making a queer face. You know, some sort of bizarre like. Like Captain Sisko's acting weird, or Captain Sisko's getting horny.
Commander, he's still a commander.
Commander, yes, because of racism.
Yeah,
right.
He doesn't get captain until later.
I love third season. My favorite was Odo's expressions because he looked exasperated. He looked exasperated, but also forgiving in a way that says humans are just stupid, man. This isn't news. Like you signed up for this.
I think that was Odo's way of saying just go home, jerk off. That's all you got.
Even Odo knows about that.
Don't sleep with Marcellus Wallace's wife.
I guess we just saw it differently.
Okay.
I don't think Odo said you should go jerk off.
I was like, why is Dan's been giving me the serious look?
Stank.
Because he doesn't think Odo thought that he. That's how I interpreted it.
Dan, you thought it was Odo said he was going to. Remember, Odo said he couldn't find any description of this person on the ship? Because Sisko was looking for the for what's her name?
Because she's just wearing a red dress.
Because it was fucked up.
Because all he did was like mention her red dress, but he didn't mention the fact that she had double Vulcan pointy ears. Yeah. Like she had double. How many species?
It wasn't quite like Vulcan ears. It was they were different. They were pointy, but like the bottom of them in the middle was different.
But so he described the color of her dress and he described the color of her skin, but he didn't mention her species or the shape of her ears. That would have helped out.
It was somewhere between Vulcan and Cassier.
So I think like if he had mentioned that would have helped Odo better find what he was looking for.
For real, dude.
Do you remember the part where he's talking to Jake and Jake is all like, it's okay. You can date people. That's cool. He's like, when can I meet her? And Sisko's like, I don't know about that. And Sisko eventually is like, she keeps disappearing.
Oh yeah, that was a weird scene.
Well, then like it goes to Jake and Jake's like, oh, okay. All right, dad's gone crazy.
Yeah, because Jake's looks went from like, oh, okay. Then he's kind of like, huh. Yeah. And then he's like, I need to stay away from my dad because he sounds fucked up.
Yeah.
The look he gave was like, dad has gone legitimately insane.
Yeah.
Because
he's finally cracked.
Because I would think that Jake would at least ask a follow-up being like, disappear how? You know, but he didn't ask any follow-ups. You know, he was just too weirded out. They mentioned, Odo mentioned some Villis Thed. Like, that was also something that didn't really have anything
to do excited about that.
Yeah, I know.
Like, oh, there's going to be this whole B-plot about them hunting down this criminal, and it's somehow going to connect to the main mystery.
And even more so because the Villis Thed is a short-range telepath, and she's a
psycho-projective.
The Dell is a psycho-projective telepath.
She's a psycho-projective telepath, and Villis Thed is a short-range telepath, so I thought they had a chance. Maybe they had like a whole different story worked out, and they re-edited it to like make it something different.
Re-edited it?
Maybe like if they because the editor can change like the whole vibe.
They can re-edit it.
The editor can change like the whole vibe of a story, right?
Well, and I think also I don't know if that happened. Maybe at the
script
stage.
I'm just being silly.
I don't think it's necessarily silly.
I'm just being fun.
Is that what you call fun?
Being fun.
Is this
a man of intelligence and taste?
I'm using this as a convenient segue to a comment that I have in my notes.
Klingon food? Those are worms!
I was just reminded by looking at my notes one thing that's interesting to me about this episode is that it has some noirish elements, but not stylistically. Often when they do a noir version of a story, and Deep Space Nine has done it a couple times with Odo, like Things Past and all that, they overtly use noirish cinematic techniques and shadows and all this other stuff. Here it's more of like a plot thing. You have this mystery woman, you have a protagonist in Sisko with a sad backstory, and it's like, is this woman taking advantage of him? Is she cheating on her husband? Like, what exactly is going on here?
Is she just
But then it has
made
this,
of energy.
So you think they just introduced? Twist. Do you think they just introduced all these things were red herrings? Like Villa
yes,
said, was
I
a red
exactly.
herring.
Exactly. That's what made me think about it. I think and red herring slash adding color to the background that this is the environment they're in. And I think it also goes matches up with what I was talking about earlier with these one-on-one conversations. Is again similar to the detective getting through the story, talking to people, interviewing them, getting some information or not, and them leaving with having a quizzical look on their face when he leaves because he's a goofy, charismatic guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Seems like they could have done more with that. Yeah. I mean, like, I dig the idea of there's a funky alien that's a psycho projective, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And
the Dell is a psycho projective telepath.
Exactly.
And like the byproduct, it's sci-fi, so you know, Cisco's gonna fall in love with this psycho projective.
Forget about it, Jake. It's sci-fi.
And like that's kind of a cool story. But I don't know. Sometimes I thought it was a little clunky.
Yeah, I mean it's not perfect,
but
it's a little slow.
It was a cool idea. That terraformer motherfucker was a little off the. A little over the top for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did such a good job of being aggravating that he aggravates the audience, and I think that is a complaint some people have. But I actually respect that. I'm like annoyed by this fella.
There's something to be said about
this is art that got a reaction out of
right,
it, right?
Exactly.
That's one of the
you get
reactions.
A reaction.
Just like Dan's lists often get reactions.
Right. Speaking
was
of,
was there
which,
another list?
He's got a list of eight admissions of arrogance.
Real quick, I want some Andorian two. Tuber root. Apparently, according to Dax, they're delicious.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. Tuber root.
Tuber root.
Okay, admission of arrogance. Number one, Cisco says, Professor, I'm a great admirer of your work. Yeah. And then, I already went over this. He says, a man of intelligence and taste. I can see we're going to get along famously. Mm. It's arrogant, but it's him saying a man of intelligence is taste. It's almost affable, making
I'm complimenting you because you think I'm awesome.
It's more like it's not like that. It's almost affable in the way that he's making a statement about himself that's so boldly narcissistic that he's admitting that he's aware of it. You know, it's something. It's like good natured. It's like I'm full of myself, but that's just me. Yeah. You know,
deal with it.
So actually, this is a 7-point list. Saitic says a great terraformer needs the green thumb of a gardener, the eye of a painter, and the soul of a poet, and of course it doesn't hurt to be a raging egomaniac. That last part, it doesn't hurt to be a raging egomaniac. He's like, yep, that's me.
I thought that list might end with
a soul of a poet.
No, I thought it was going to end with a duck.
And a duck.
A duck.
A duck.
There we go. All right, number
three. Bog. Bee. A duck.
Number three.
Bashir says, I once saw an exhibit of your paintings.
Can you back up? I've been noticing a trend here, Dan. I'm starting to think it's on purpose.
Is that Canadian?
He's doing some sort of, what is that, like, is that like a is New York, Philly? What is that? I've been inserting a few little things.
I'll insert something into you. Lately I've been into saying sandwich instead of sandwich.
Yeah. I like to say sandwich.
Sandwich is good. Sandwich is better. Because I met a guy that once seriously said
sandwich.
Sandwich. He kept saying, it was like the most normal thing.
Like it was
thing.
Sanguine? It had blood on like, yeah,
it? Was he exsanguinating people?
Oh, shit.
He was just this older Chicago cop guy or something. I don't know. Or was he Chicago? I don't know. He was some guy. Kind of guy.
I don't
know.
Chicago.
I don't know if it was
How
Chicago.
Did you come across this fellow?
Got bears.
Maybe that's not a...
It was here and there.
Yes.
Through the roots.
Perhaps, yes.
I once saw an exhibit of your paintings at the Central Gallery on Lagobas 10.
Lagobas 10.
They were certainly memorable. I don't think I've seen such huge canvases. Saitic says, Doctor, nobody ever accused me of understatement. Once again, he's like, yep, I'm a dick.
Yep.
And
how big were those canvases?
Big enough.
Fuck.
Saitic says, 9 volumes and counting. You know, I always wanted to write as many books as I've had marriages. That's that's self-deprecation straight up right there.
How thick were those books?
Well, it's sort of humble brag because he's saying, like, I've tricked 9 ladies into marrying me.
Yeah, but he's also saying, like, no one can stand me.
Yeah, because he's so awesome.
I mean, I guess it depends on how you look at it. That's not how I see it, but I can see.
They think they want to marry him, and then it turns out.
I interpret that quote unquote self-deprecating thing to be like, I am such a powerful force that even my annoyance level is so unique as to simultaneously draw in and repel people. I think it's grandiose. Everything, even his character flaws, are the greatest character flaws of all time.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. He's really not the kind of character you see in Deep Space Nine typically. He's more of like a TOS or a TNG.
I think he's very TOS.
Patrick, to your point,
TOS, yes.
That's not precisely how I see it, but I can understand and respect that perspective.
And at the end of the day, isn't that what Star Trek's all about?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Infinite diversity in infinite combinations.
I still think there's a bit of self-deprecation.
And I accept that.
Okay, number
because five. I too watch Star Trek.
So number five. Saitic says, so what were we talking about, Sisko? You. Saitic says, of course, my favorite subject. Where was I? We talked about this. See, some of these we talked about. He knows that's him saying he knows he's full of himself by saying, like, of course, I'm my favorite subject. Like, it's so brazen for him to say something like that. I knew a guy like that once that would like very obviously it's like go like, yeah, because I'm so great after all. It's like almost like he was joking, but he wasn't joking. So he was simultaneously being arrogant, but also being aware of his arrogance. But I guess that's arrogance still because you're like, I'm aware of my arrogance and yet I still think I'm great. So maybe it's even more arrogant somehow. Like it's opposite day. When it's opposite
day. Who was
day,
that guy?
When someone says it's opposite day, doesn't that mean it's not opposite day? Okay. But then that means it is opposite day.
Because it's the opposite.
Yeah, but then it means it's not opposite day.
Philosophers have discussed this for 10,000 years.
It's like what happens.
We're not going to solve that in the last 7 minutes.
Tree like falls in the forest. Does anybody hear?
I think a potential analogy could be what is it? Where the person who's robbing you can tell you that they're robbing you and still rob you. Or still con you, maybe. Maybe that's a better analogy. Where they're like, okay. I'm going to trick you out of your money, and even though I'm telling you that I'm doing it or even how I'm going to do it, it's still going to happen.
But everybody's getting robbed because at the same time.
But it's not like if it's opposite day and like you say in your head, you know, it's opposite day. You say, I like this. But then you're like, oh, I have to say, I hate this because it's the opposite day. But in opposite world, hating means you like it. So but saying you hate it means you're saying you like it. So it's you're still saying you hate it.
What about when they say that's bad?
When you say
do they mean it's bad?
When it's opposite day and you say you hate something, hate means you like it. But when you're saying you hate it, means you're saying you're liking it, and liking actually means you hate it. So you're back to hating it again.
I'm hoping our international listeners are those folks outside of the U.S.
Are you confused?
North
by
America
the English
are understanding what opposite day means from the context because I think it doesn't exist in most other countries. I think most other countries aren't quite so stupid.
I think it's pretty self-evident.
I bet you that's
true.
That's got to be true. Yeah.
All okay, right, number six.
Number six.
Sisko, she must love you very much. And Saitek says, she does, Commander. Don't ask me why, but she does. You know, he's kind of in denial at this point, though. Because on number okay, first of all, he says, don't ask me why, which is like him admitting I'm not that great. But he's kind of in denial because it doesn't seem like she even does love him.
No, seems like she's pretty much tired of
him. Yeah, she's just with him because her culture dictates that she must. So she doesn't even love him, so he's kind of in denial.
He seems aware of this, but I think this is an excellent point of how they wrote and portrayed this character. That's maybe not the obvious choice that I really liked, which is he's coded as asshole and he's aggravating people, but nothing he does actually suggests he's like a piece of shit.
Right.
Now he's been divorced a lot.
He's just obnoxious.
But
Like
he seems to care and be sad that his wife is sad. Like he doesn't seem to want to cause people pain. And maybe that's why he does all the goofy laughter stuff.
Yeah.
But I liked that they made this guy a piece of shit, like coded as a piece of shit, but not actually like a piece
he's
of shit,
deaf.
Which is kind of an interesting way to go.
It's interesting.
And then the final one, he says, Saitek says, you may have noticed, Commander, that I tend to invoke strong emotions from people. Here he's saying he's aware of what he's like.
Evoke.
What?
Evoke, I think.
What did I say?
I think you may have said invoke.
I don't think I said invoke.
Right. No.
I don't think I even
said
evoke. Evoke.
You said evoke.
I don't even know what I said. I know I didn't say invoke.
All right.
Anyways.
I know you didn't mean invoke.
Okay. Good. Then we agree.
Because you are not a simpleton, sir.
Yes.
You are many things, but you are no simpleton.
I wish I could believe that. There's no way to be sure.
So I tend to, oh no, I'm sorry. The reason you heard invoke is because that's the line he said. Oh. He said, you may have noticed, Commander, that I tend to invoke strong emotions from people.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's what he said.
Invoke. It should be.
That's what he said.
Huh. I don't think invoke.
Yeah, anyway.
I don't think invoke works.
Okay. Well, anyway, so basically that's saying he knows what he's like. Okay. And then he says, I tend to invoke strong emotions from people, particularly my wives. Oh, they all start out loving me, but a few years of togetherness soon cures them of that. My others.
It's only a few years.
Hey, I'm
should be less than
okay,
that.
Can we talk about this when I'm done with the quote, please?
I'm sorry.
It's okay. But a few years of togetherness soon cures them of that. My others all had the good sense to leave me. It's almost like all his bravado is to cover up his inability to feel love.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then he's admitting he knows what he's like. He is like, and he's admitting like, yeah, you know, people think I'm fucking lame sometimes. So anyway, sorry, Jesse.
It was a good list. Now, I think we're finally ready, Dan. I think we're finally ready for that countdown, because there was a countdown where they did the old 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then
what were you
going to
say? What were you going to say, Jesse?
I think he said it.
I think I said it.
Yeah, he said it.
I just interrupted you.
Okay. At 40 minutes and 15 seconds, they say,
he's about 60 seconds from impact.
At 40 minutes and 42 seconds, so 15 to 42, they say,
30 seconds from impact.
No
so that's
way.
15, 25, 35, 45. That's like 3 seconds off 30 seconds. I'm going to say that's okay. Accurate. So all that's right. Accurate.
Oh, okay. I would say anything within 5 seconds is accurate.
So, yes. So from 40 minutes.
That can be our a priori threshold.
So that's, we're at 30 seconds. Now from at 41 minutes and 26 seconds, she says,
10 seconds.
So from 40 to 40, 42 to 41, 26, it goes from 30 to 10. 42, 52, 2, 12, 22. That's so, like 45 seconds difference from 30 to 10.
Okay, so just to be clear, I'm trusting you on this.
Are you like some kind of number wizard?
I just hear a bunch of numbers.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm trying to figure out a way to say this in a way.
I enjoy it.
It's hard to like, I understand it's hard to
I'm
like.
I'm going to bear with you.
It's hard to not look at this.
But it's okay. Important. It's evidence.
It is evidence. It's definitely, yeah. It's definitely.
Evidence!
So 40, 42, 41, 26. That's a difference of 42, 52, 2, 22. I'm sorry. 52, 2, 12, 22, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's about 45 seconds difference.
All right.
And then it goes
that's a big difference.
And it goes, yeah, and it goes from 30 seconds to 10 seconds. So only 20 seconds have passed, supposedly, because she says 30 seconds to impact, then she says 10 seconds to impact. Only 20 seconds have supposedly passed, but in real time, it was about 45 seconds. Yeah. So that's way
which
off.
Which is most of a minute.
Yeah, that's way off.
Now, what about the 5 seconds?
If you want to round it, you can say 40 minutes and 40 seconds to 41 minutes and 25 seconds if you want to round it. That's
we
like,
don't need to round it. I like the exact numbers.
Okay. Spock over here.
Oh, no, they're just comfortable.
Spocko.
So we're already way off. Like, it was twice as long as they said it was going to be. It's supposed to be 20 seconds. It was 40 plus seconds different. So we're way off. And then from 41:26 to 41:32, it goes from 10 seconds to
5 seconds.
32 minus 26 is 6. So that's about right.
That's
it's correct from 60 to 30. It's correct from 10 to 5, but it's way off 30 to 10.
I'm super excited about how correct it was from 5 to 0.
Yeah.
Do you have that?
Oh, shit.
Did you not?
I didn't. I don't. I
did
you,
not look up the five.
I didn't. Shit, five. You're way. It's too bad. You're way excited about
right.
That.
That's like the main event, right? That's where
I guess
fucking
that I guess
crashes into the fucking star. Says, "Let there be light."
Yeah. I can. We can. You can vamp for a bit.
No.
I can,
no. This is the end of the episode.
This is the end of the episode. No, we haven't run out of time.
We've run out of fucking time.
Look at the clock, baby. Look at the clock.
No. We haven't run out of time.
We still got to do the end matter. We got to tell them what we're talking about next.
We're overtime.
Okay.
All right. Well, you do your best in this amount of time here. I think we might have to just report on this next week, Dan. So again, this is great. That's something to look forward to next week, folks.
I'm sorry, Benjamin.
I know earlier I promised that Dan would totally have this whole 5 second thing. I've been advertising it all episode.
I had all the rest of that.
You did have all the other ones, and that's great. I think that's super duper. You did an excellent job.
This was a super duper podcast.
Didn't quite bring it home, you know.
5 seconds.
Bring it home next week. All right, so Dan is just like watching the episode now. I'll go ahead and start the end matter, and we'll see if Dan figures it out in the
He crashes at 41 minutes and 42 seconds.
Okay. So what does that mean?
So if he crashed at 41 minutes and 42 seconds and it was 5 seconds at 41:32, it's 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
10 yeah, seconds.
From... Twice as much. Yeah, it's a lot. That's
so yeah, 50%. So we did it.
100%. 100%.
So from five, so what was 5 seconds was actually 10 seconds, and what was 20 seconds was actually 40 seconds.
All right, so in that case, you have nothing to look forward to next week other than...
I just wanted to say goodbye and thank you.
Other than the fact that we will be watching an episode of Star Trek Voyager. Another second season episode. This was second season, and then Star Trek Voyager's second season, we're going to be watching the old episode. What was it called? Oh, yes. Twisted. Voyager's Twisted.
Maybe you should write that down.
Yes, you all write that down.
I'm going to try.
Spool it up in your streaming players. Or
you've got to do something. You've got to do something.
DVDs or whatever you use.
DVDs nuts.
Watch Twisted from Star Trek Voyager's second season.
You have my word.
Okay. So that's what we'll be talking about next week. We've concluded our discussion of Second Sight. So you can go to our website at www.discussstartrek.com.
Nice. You threw up.
Sound effect. Excellent. patreon.com/itsgotstartrek if you want to help us pay for, hosting and all that other stuff.
What's he talking about?
Well, you can go check it out and see. We're on.
So then what's the problem?
Facebook. We're on YouTube. Subscribe to us on YouTube. That would be a real big help if you wouldn't mind. No live video, but there's nice static images, and you can listen to the podcast, and there's occasionally some bonus stuff up there.
You got me interested.
And everywhere else, you can find us on social media at It's Got Star Trek. Probably Blue Sky is where we're most prevalent there, but we're everywhere.
Do you always do that?
You can find us there. And then finally, of course, feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you want us to do for It's Not Star Trek. And Dan should do a list of lists. Dan appears to have one final last-minute thing.
That's an order. Dax says, 30 seconds from impact. Sisko says, Gideon, I want you to turn the shuttle pod around now. That's an order.
All right, there you go.
It was unnecessary.
Dan likes to highlight these things, and we like to hear them highlighted as a matter of course.
Yeah.
That one was not as interesting as they sometimes are.
But it wasn't interesting, wasn't necessary. He could have worded it differently.
He could have worded it differently.
Starfleet Mammoth.
He could have said, I order you to turn the shuttle pod around. Unless he didn't consider that it was an order until after he said it. But I find that hard to believe.
Yeah. And it wasn't clear that Sisko technically had jurisdiction over this fella because he was using a Federation ship, a Starfleet ship. But anyway, it's something we just won't get to discuss this week because we've run out of time. But
I'm stressed out.
But we will talk to you again this time next week. Goodbye.
You'll never see anything like this again.
I love you.
I love you too, Dan.
So then Tiet looked down at Altrina's lunch and said, Klingon food? Those are worms. And Altrina vomited all over the table. It was pretty disgusting.
That's nice, Jake.
Nice? She threw up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I must have been thinking about something else.